MacCast, Monday, March 7th, 2005. Hey, Mac Geeks, welcome to your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geek. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. So let's get right into what's going on in the world of Apple today. There are a couple companies that are now suing Apple for different patent infringement reasons for both iTunes and the iPod. A company named PatRights out of Hong Kong is claiming that they have a patent for verifying a user before permitting downloads. So basically they're saying that, you know, in iTunes, if you use the music store, you go through a process of authorizing your different computers to play the music that you purchase and download, and you can authorize up to 5 computers at a time. They're claiming that they have patented that process of authorizing a computer to play or download specific content. And what they're asking for is 12% from Apple. They want 12% of all iTunes and iPod sales revenue. Not sales revenue, but profits. And that they realize this patent also covers other services besides iTunes, but they're starting with Apple, and then we'll move on to the other services that require authorization before downloading music. So sounds like a pretty broad patent, but I guess they own it, and they're going to go after protecting it. So we'll see what happens there. The other company is a company called Advanced Audio Devices, and they are claiming that Apple's iPod music player violates one of their patents. There wasn't much in the way of details on what this patent absolutely covers, but it's being reported in the Chicago Tribune that they filed a lawsuit in December, and they're alleging that the iPod infringed on their music jukebox patent, whatever that means. So we've talked a lot on this show about the Motorola iTunes cell phone, and that's been rumored to be coming out for a really long time. Well, now the word on the street seems to be that that will happen this Thursday. The phone is going to be called the Rocker, R-O-K-R, and it is expected to be announced on Thursday at the CeBIT conference in Germany. And Motorola will announce that it has the first iTunes or cell phone with iTunes integration. And this story is according to Newsweek. So pretty reliable source. We should see that. Hopefully I'll have an update on Friday. We've also been talking a lot recently on the MacCast about retail store closings, Apple retail store closings. Well, a bit of good news today in the retail storefront. A company in San Luis Obispo, California, has actually opened the first all iPod retail store. There's a store called Mac Superstore in San Luis Obispo that I guess has been selling Mac products for a while, and they had a iPod section inside the store. Well, they've now broken that out and put it into its very own location. So they're claiming it's the first retail store completely dedicated to iPods and iPod accessories. I saw this article over on iPodLounge.com, which is a great iPod news website if you've never visited it. And there's a link from the show notes to pictures of this retail store. It's pretty cool. It seems a little sparse on the inside, but I'm sure with all the new iPod accessories coming out for the different iPods, they'll stock up really quickly, and it's just kind of a cool thing to see. So more news on the legal front, and I've been avoiding this story because we covered it so much, and it's Apple suing the weblogs for releasing information before the last Macworld. They're claiming they let out secrets that shouldn't have been exposed. And we've been back and forth on the issue of whether sources for blogs or bloggers that need to or have the right to protect their sources or keep them confidential. And before a couple shows ago, I think I had said that I got some information from one of the listeners who was a lawyer who said there are no privilege protections for sources for news media. Well, now I'm seeing a story saying that actually in California there's some sort of law that protects the regular media, what we call the broadcast media or traditional periodical publications, but that law is not extending to the web. But the organization that is working, I believe, with the EFF. It's called the Deplume Organization, and they're the ones that are protecting the Think Secret website, or are acting as lawyers for Think Secret, have filed a motion to have Apple's lawsuit completely thrown out and dismissed on First Amendment grounds. So hopefully they make some inroads in that. You know, I maintain personally that I think the news media, and I'm including bloggers with that, I think bloggers have just as much rights as the traditional news media in this day and age, or they should, in terms of protecting the confidentiality of their sources, you know, and their ability to report the news. I think in a lot of cases we're seeing more and more that blogs are breaking news and more accurate news more quickly than the traditional news media outlets. You know, this is the winds of change. I think podcasting is all part of this. And so I support any thing that's going to help protect those rights. But now the lawyers are moving to have the case dismissed. I do know the other day that Apple did get the rights from the courts to have those, to force those websites to have their sources revealed. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens on that. Like I said, I've been avoiding reporting this news just because I got kind of tired of the whole legal back and forth and all these legal news articles. But it is part of Apple News, so I guess I have an obligation to report it to you. Microsoft today released a software update to its Office 2004 suite for Macintosh. It's version 11.1.1, and this update includes improvements to Excel add-in calculations, supposed to improve the stability of PowerPoint and Word, and add support for new device drivers, and then also improves the appearance of imported graphics. So for those of you who use Office, you may want to grab that update. Apple's going to be opening a new retail store in Jacksonville, Florida. It's scheduled to open on Friday, March 18th, so we're seeing more and more growth in the Apple retail storefront. Also along those lines, I reported a few shows back, I believe, that Canada is going to be getting their first Apple retail store, and that it would be opening on May 21st. In the Yorkdale Shopping Center, but apparently this is in Toronto, by the way, Toronto, Canada. But apparently today the Yorkdale Shopping Center management officially came out and retracted the claim that the grand opening would be happening on May 21st and said that there has not been an official date set for the opening of that store, but it will be announced on their website when it becomes available. So those of you in Canada, I guess, are going to just have to wait, or you know, maybe the actual date is the 21st, but Apple just didn't want the information leaked out yet. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but you will have an Apple store soon. It just may not be on May 21st like we originally thought. So who's excited to get their hands on a copy of Tiger? I know I am anxiously awaiting the next release of the Macintosh operating system, version 10.4. And it looks like there's some rumors now that that may be happening soon, at least within the next 60 days is kind of what people are speculating. And part of the thing that's fueling this is that at least about a half a dozen websites have written in and have been pointing out that over on Apple's download area of their website, they added a bunch of new categories in the right-hand side sidebar that point to add-ins and updates that will be supported in Tiger. And those things are the Automator Actions, which is Apple's new AppleScript utility for generating AppleScripts, a Dashboard Widgets section, which is the new thing to support widget dashboard thing, little JavaScript utilities that run right on your desktop, and a Spotlight plugins area, and Spotlight is the new search feature. So they have those links in the sidebar. They go to page not found errors right now, but just the fact that Apple has put those up in the sidebar is kind of getting a lot of people excited about the fact that Tiger may be coming soon. And it's Apple Insider that's reporting that they think it will go gold master, the CD will go gold master in the next 60 days. So we'll just have to wait and see. I hope that's true. I'm looking really forward to seeing Tiger. I've seen some of the developer preview stuff, and it looks very, very promising. So I'm excited about it. Hopefully you all are too, and I'm sure you are. Okay, last bit of news tonight is good for anybody who is in the market for an iPod Shuffle and has had a hard time getting their hands on one. We're getting reports now from retailers that the supply of iPod Shuffles has significantly improved, and they're receiving more and more quantities every day, so you should be able to find an iPod Shuffle readily available at your favorite retail outlet. So good luck and enjoy those shuffles. So I continue to get great audio comments and feedback and questions from everyone, and I'm going to start off tonight with a question from a listener, Peter, who had a question about burning CDs and DVDs on his Mac.
Hey, Adam, this is Peter, and I've got a question for you about making CDs or DVDs for a PC. At one point, I had a PC, and I have about 20 CDs that I made full of family photo album type images, and I need to make copies of these CDs, but at this point I only have a PowerBook. I do have a DVD burner, and I'd love to put them onto DVDs. However, as far as I can tell, the only way to burn a DVD is with a Mac format, and if I package these up and send them off, my PC relatives won't be able to read it. So I'm wondering, how would you go about burning a PC formatted DVD or PC formatted CDs on the Mac? Thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing your answer.
So Peter needs to know how to burn a PC compatible CD or DVD on his Mac, and luckily I knew the answer to this one. And if you have OS 10.3, it's super, super easy. You insert your blank DVD or CD into your drive, and then when it mounts up, you want to choose the Finder as the place where you want to create your CD or DVD. Drag the files that you want onto the CD or DVD and burn it. By default, Mac OS 10.3 burns what's called a Mac OS 10 hybrid CD, which means that it's compatible in both Mac OS 10 and on a PC, and it uses the standard ISO 9660 for the hybrid portion that works on the PC. So very easy to do. You just burn it and you don't really have to worry about it. Apple makes it as easy as possible. If you're using an older version of the operating system, 10.2, I have a link in the show notes to an article on Apple's support website that explains this a little bit further, but basically when you put the CD in, you're going to check off and say use the Finder and burn a HFS Plus / ISO 9660 hybrid disk. And if you're using 10.1 or earlier, you just burn using the standard format, which is HFS Plus / ISO 9660. But like I said, check the show notes for the link if you're on one of those older operating systems, and there's a better explanation than I can provide in this podcast on how to burn compatible CDs and DVDs that'll be compatible with with a PC if you're sending them to someone who's on a PC. All right, next we have a question about a monitor from Access Deny, who's commented on the show before. He received a monitor, and he has a question about hooking it up to his Macintosh.
This is Access Deny, recording from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was hoping all my fellow Mac geeks could give me a hand with a monitor problem I'm having. I recently got a Silicon Graphics 19-inch CRT monitor, circa mid to late 90s. It has a proprietary connector on it, like the Apple ADC connectors were proprietary, but I do have a converter, a Silicon Graphics to VGA converter. It does show up as recognizing the monitor in my display preferences under OS X, but it won't come out of amber mode. I can change the resolution and the refresh rate, but still nothing. So if anybody could give me a hand, that'd be great. Thanks, folks.
So I don't know. I'm stumped on this one. I don't have much experience with Silicon Graphics monitors and hooking them to their Macintosh. It sounds like there's some sort of proprietary connector, but he has a converter, and it won't come out of amber mode. I'm assuming that means it's like a single color type mode, but I'm not, again, really sure about that. Access did send me a photo of the adapter, so I will go ahead and put that on the website, the blog, maccast.com. You can take a look at it there, but maybe if someone has the answer to how to hook up an old SGI monitor to your Macintosh via SGI's proprietary connector, if they could send the information to me and we can get that forwarded on, I'm sure Access would appreciate it. All right, thanks. All right. Also, a couple shows ago, we had a listener, Sam, call in, and he was having trouble with Firefox and having to quit twice to get Firefox to quit. And I had originally thought that maybe this was just a simple Mac to PC switcher issue, and not realizing that when you actually close the window on a Macintosh program, it doesn't actually quit the program. You actually have to choose quit from the menu bar to get the application to quit. A lot of PC users seem to have this issue when they first switch, because on the PC, most of the time in an application, if you close the window, it also quits the application. But I'm finding more and more that that probably isn't the case. And I actually got email back from Sam letting me know that this wasn't the case. And another listener had a possible solution or thought on what it might be.
Hey, Adam. It's Sam from Tampa. Regarding the question from the listener named Adam about having to quit Firefox twice, I think he's probably having a real problem, and not just an issue with not knowing how to properly quit applications on his Mac, as you suggested. As you probably know, Firefox has a built-in bookmark synchronization capability, so that you can keep your bookmarks synchronized between, say, your desktop and your laptop, or your home computer and work computer. The same way you would use iSync to keep your Safari bookmarks synchronized among your various computers. You do this in Firefox by going under the Bookmarks menu and choosing Synchronize Bookmarks, and this opens a separate window called the Bookmarks Synchronizer, and in this window you can enter the address of your iDisk or any other online storage site, and then you can upload your bookmarks and go to your other computer and download them so that you have an identical set of bookmarks, and every time you change them you can upload them and then re-download them on your other computers. In order to automate this, they put two options on that bookmark synchronizer window as well. One is to automatically upload your bookmarks every time you quit Firefox, and the other is to automatically download the bookmarks every time you open Firefox. Now, if you have that auto upload on exit option checked, what happens is what Adam was describing. The first time you hit quit, your main browser window will close, and then it goes into the process of uploading your bookmarks. Once your bookmarks are uploaded, though, Firefox doesn't quit all the way. You have to hit quit a second time to make the program quit. So I would tell Adam the first thing he needs to do is see if he's got that automatic synchronization capability turned on. If it is, he can either turn it off and just upload his bookmarks manually every time he changes them, like I do, or he can get used to having to hit quit twice until they fix this on a future version of Firefox. Hope that's helpful. Thanks.
All right. So I had that a little mistake in there. The comment, the response is from Sam, and it was actually Adam who was having the original Firefox problem. So I just want to correct that really quickly. So it looks like this is a problem with something called the bookmark synchronizer. Now, I looked at my Firefox, and I didn't see that feature as a standard feature. But what it is available as is as a extension. It's a separate download that you have to download and install. Firefox has several types of extensions that you can get. If you go into the Firefox menu, let me get the menu for you. Hold on. Okay, it's called Tools. If you go under the Tools menu and choose Extensions, you'll see a submenu, and then you can click the button to get more extensions. And one of the extensions in the Bookmarks category is this Bookmarks Synchronizer, which I guess a lot of people use. And it lets you synchronize, like Sam was saying, your bookmarks between any two computers, or I would assume multiple computers running Firefox. And apparently if you have that running when you have its auto-upload feature checked on, then when you actually go to quit the application, that program kicks in, runs, and then the Firefox doesn't quit, and you have to choose quit a second time to get the program to actually quit. So that's probably the next best guess as to what's happening with Adam's Firefox, and hopefully we've got it this time. So Adam, if you're using that feature, please check that and get back to us and let us know if that worked for you. All right, thanks. Okay, lastly tonight, I had a comment from Shane, and Shane wanted to know or wanted me to run down what I go through to get together the show notes for you guys for each show, or how I prep, I guess, each show. I actually use a program from the Omni Group. It's a really great program called Omni Outliner Pro. The website, I believe, is omnigroup.com. There's a link from the show notes. And it's basically an outliner program. It has support for attachments and audio and video and links, and it's a really good outlining program. So basically, I just run through my RSS, my news aggregator, run down all the Apple news websites that I visit, and kind of conglomerate all the stories, put them up into a little outline format. And then as I am running through the show, I actually just reference that Omni Outliner file and go straight down the list and give out all my comments. And then what's really great about Omni Outliner Pro is it has awesome export features, and it exports the OPML version of the show notes as well as the HTML version, and it's a dynamic HTML version. So if you've ever visited the show notes on the website, you know I have the little expanding triangles that expand the different nodes of the outline, and you can expand and collapse them, and Omni Outliner actually generates all the JavaScript and everything to enable that feature as well. So really great program if you're looking for an outlining program, something to do preparation for just about anything that you need an outline for. So check it out, Omni Outliner Pro from the Omni Group. All right, I'm going to end the show tonight with a quick little review of a product that was sent to me. It is a iPod stand. If you don't want to use Apple's or buy Apple's iPod dock, it's a stand from a company called Thought Out. Their website is thoughtout.biz, and the stand is called the iPad stand. This is the version 1 that they sent me. The one I have is in gray. And it is a little stand. It's made out of durable metal. It's got nice rubberized pads around it to hold the iPod in place. And it's got a little cable management hole with a nice rubber grommet. The base of the stand is really nice. It's designed to match Apple's studio display, which I really like a lot. It's very durable and rugged. The one thing when I got mine is it's designed to support third generation and fourth generation iPods. As I've mentioned before, I have a second generation iPod, and I was just curious to see if it would work with mine. It isn't quite a snug fit on the sides, and I was a bit concerned with the angle of it that my iPod might fall forward, but I was surprised to find that when I stuck it in the stand, just the weight of the iPod held it in the stand. So I'm not sure if this is the case for the second generation, the third or fourth generation iPods. My guess is that they fit a little more snugly. It looks really nice sitting on your desk. And like I said, it matches the studio display. I had them just send me, they have it in a couple different colors. Gray, an off-white, and a new bright white to match the iPod. I just had them send me the gray one just so that I could get a demo model. And they have a lot of the gray available. I guess the new bright white is the most popular. It's the one that's going to match the white of the iPod. But it's a nice heavy-duty stand. The one thing I do wish is, as it was sitting on my desk and I had my iPod on it, there's not enough weight to the base where you can actually push the buttons on the iPod without the stand moving back. So you still have to kind of either hold the base or hold the iPod in place as you push the button. So if you hook it up to a pair of powered audio speakers, you're not going to be able to just hit the buttons. Now, again, this may be different with the new third or fourth generation iPods that have just the touch-sensitive buttons. So it probably works a lot better with that, and it is designed for those models. So it would be very good. The only other thing that I kind of didn't like about it was the fact that you couldn't change the angle of the screen or of the iPod, how the iPod sits in the stand. So it's at a fixed viewing angle. They do have a new version, the iPad 2, which has some more features. As you might want to go to the website and check that one out. And that one does actually swivel. It has a swivel head, so you can change the angle. But I did notice with the original iPad, when I had it at a normal distance on my desk, I could see the front of the iPod just fine. So that worked out really well. The new stand, the iPad 2, has some other great features that you may be interested in if you're looking for a nice iPod stand. It works with or without cases and skins, and it also is compatible with pocket dock connectors. I guess those are a popular option as well. So, and the little cable hole, the cable management hole, looks like it would be nice. Again, it didn't work with my iPod since I have the connectors on the top, but very nice stands, very well built. If you're looking for an alternative, check out thoughtout.biz for more information. So they also have a stand that works with the iPod Shuffle. It's called the iPad Shuffle. So lots of stand options if you're in the market for an iPod stand. All right, that's going to be it for your MacCast for tonight. I want to thank everybody who's gone over to podcastalley.com and voted for the MacCast with the new voting system in place. We're back up in the top 10. We're at number 4, actually. If you haven't gone over and voted, I please encourage you to do so. Hopefully we can maybe move into the top 3 or maybe even the top spot. Who knows? But you know, they've now enabled voting once a month. Oh, the other thing I really wanted to say thank you for is... everybody who's added comments. Now when you actually do your vote, they give you the opportunity to make comments, and a lot of people have made some really great comments about the MacCast, and it's very, very appreciated by me. I go through and read those, and I appreciate all the nice things you guys have said about the MacCast, and I will continue to hopefully put forth the effort you've come to expect from me, and I'm just completely grateful that you guys are enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm enjoying bringing it to you, so thanks. So last thing, actually, I keep saying last thing, but anyway, another thing I want to try out is a listener sent me information about Audio Blogger, which I guess is an extension to Blogger, which I already use for the MacCast.com website. And what you can do with Audio Blogger is you can actually phone in blog comments, and it's, you know, designed for one person, but he thought it might be a good idea for leaving audio comments, and I kind of agree with him. So we're going to try this out. We'll see how it works. You got to kind of jump through some hoops to do this, but I encourage you to give it a try, because what's going to be really neat about it is anybody will be able to go in and listen to this feedback. So what you do is I set up a website. It's mcfeedback.blogspot.com. That's mcfeedback.blogspot.com, so MacCast feedback, and go to that website. There's instructions on the right, but I'm going to run through those for you right now. If you call, and this is a U.S. telephone number, 661-716-2564, that's 661-716-BLOG, okay, you call that number, and a voice will come on the line, and it'll ask you to enter the primary number. If you enter the MacCast hotline number, 20-MACCAST-8, that's 206-222-2788, enter that as the primary phone number, and then it'll ask you for a PIN. The PIN number is 1984-1984. Once you do that, you can record an audio comment, and it will actually get posted automatically to the blog at mcfeedback.blogspot.com, and then anybody can listen to it. And it's an MP3 format, so I'll be able to pull those down and use them in the show notes if you leave comments there. So we're going to give this a try. I ask that you guys please only leave family-friendly comments. Please don't make, you know, any vulgarities or anything like that. I'm gonna monitor them, and if we have huge problems with spam or inappropriate comments, I'm going to have to shut down the site. But I thought it'd be fun to try it. That way anybody can listen to the feedback that I get. It's kind of an open feedback box. So we'll give it a shot. We'll see how it goes. Let me know what you think about it. I know there's some hoops to jump through. The instructions are going to be in the show notes, and they're also at the website, mcfeedback.blogspot.com. So you can just follow along from there, and we'll see what happens. All right. As always, visit the website, maccast.com, for the show notes with full details and links to everything I've talked about in the show. You can send me email feedback and audio feedback to maccast@gmail.com, or call the new hotline number, the mcfeedback.blogspot.com website. I will continue to maintain the original phone number, 206-222-2788, for anybody else who wants to leave comments there, and that's it. All right, tonight I'm going to leave you with new music from GarageBand.com. It's from an artist named Robert Wade, and the song is called Monkey Symbols. You can visit him at robertwade.net. If you like his stuff, let him know you heard his track on the MacCast, and if you buy a CD, let him know that you found out about him through this show. All right, appreciate it. Continue to vote at podcastalley.com, and I will see you all next time. Crazy thought.
thoughts are running through my mind. Crazy people are playing with my life. Days keep giving me a different kind of crazy ways to view this normal life. Crazy how the sun will rise, different places at different times. How a clown makes a child cry, tears fall in the happy times. Rain sounds like clapping hands and stomping feet on different lands. Monkey symbols seem to keep the time, and it's crazy these thoughts running through my mind. Na 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 na, yeah. Crazy ideas are running through my head, and it's crazy to think of what some people have said, yeah. Days keep giving me a different kind of crazy ways to view this normal life. Like, what's important's relative to the sedative your society gives you. Sit and detox, I swear you'll die. And it's the pain that keeps you alive. Stepping out on the other side, you see the sky and realize that they were wrong. But they do not mean, and no one seems to be listening to anyone or anything I mean. And tell me the truth, are you listening? Are you listening? Yeah. Na 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 na. Monkey symbols seem to keep the time, and monkey hands look a lot like mine. And it's crazy these thoughts running through my head.